Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Group Answers Podcast. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt.
What's up, Brian Daniel?
We're smoking winter right now. It's over. I've declared it officially over.
Yeah, we have a saying around our house, spring will come, it always does. And yeah. That's what I'm feeling.
Well, as soon as we hit middle January, I declare it over. Because once we hit February around here, and that's only like 2 weeks away, you know, in middle January, we're home free.
Here's what I always look at, spring training. When do the catchers and pitchers
report? February?
Isn't
that the end of February?
When the catchers and pitchers report, that's the end of winter.
That's all you need.
Yep.
Well, Chris, we are here with Rob Timms. Rob is a former senior pastor. He is the author of Southern Pride Faith, published by Rainer Publishing. And he is the director of smallgroup.com, and he has been in that role for 7 years. Rob, welcome to the Group Answers Show.
Thanks, guys.
I can't believe it took you so long to get here.
I know. My office is right behind Chris as we speak. And I hear every podcast and never get to participate until this very moment.
Rob has to listen, but he's never let in.
Never, until now.
And so out of sight, out of mind would not work as an explanation in this.
Yeah. Did you mention that he's a doctor?
Well, it was. I said it with my eyes and no one picked up on it.
Because I asked him before show to look at a rash. And he said, I'm not that kind of doctor.
Yeah, and he's not, right?
Because I was thinking that too. Where is the rash?
That's true. He did give me the offer.
I would just say that I'm grateful for you not asking us to call you Dr. Timms all the time. But I think as Shakespeare would say, the 2 hours traffic here, we can call you Dr. Timms or Dr. Rob. I think Dr. Rob is out there, right? I mean, that's been done before.
It's copyrighted.
It's out there. I'm Dr. Dad at home. I'm Dr. Timms online for a school that I teach for, but that's about the extent of it. So I will take this 20 or 30 minute
and you
conversation.
Should.
That
we're gonna and you
I,
should.
I say this a lot. If I had a doctorate, which will never happen, it would be on my license plate.
Yeah, that's right.
That thing would be the amount of money that you probably poured into that thing.
That's the height of vanity, Chris, so I appreciate that about
time
you.
Time and, great. Yeah.
I think I would wear a t-shirt that says I'm kind of a big deal. So Dr. Timms.
My office smells of mahogany.
So we referenced smallgroup.com and Dr. Timms has, Dr. Rob has been a part of that since its inception, right?
That's right, yes.
And that is a part of this larger conversation about sermon-based studies, but we've talked about sermon-based studies obliquely before and probably had guests, Chris, that have espoused the merit of sermon-based studies, but we've never done a show where we've just talked about how to create group Bible studies, which is at the heart of sermon-based studies and what goes into just creating an effective small group study of any kind.
Yeah, it's an art. It really is an art. And I will be the first one to say that I'm not good at it. Our church did small group or did sermon-based studies. It was the main curriculum for most of our small groups. So probably 70 to 75% of our groups did sermon-based studies. And so it was my job every week to put together these sermon-based studies. And I just wasn't good at it. What I would do, and probably a lot of you relate to this, is I would listen to the pastor's sermon, because a lot of times I wouldn't get his notes that far ahead of time, listen to the sermon on the first service on Sunday morning, sit with my laptop, find 4 or 5 just quick things out of the message based on the main points or 2 quotes from him, maybe a scripture that he used or 2, and apply this to your life this week and send it out to my group leaders. And that just wasn't good. It wasn't good for discipleship. It wasn't good for anybody's study. And that's what we prepared. And so it's really hard to do an in-depth sermon-based study that is more about the message than it is the messenger. It's difficult.
Let me ask this question to Dr. Rob. How many small group Bible studies would you say you have written?
Oh, that I've personally written? Oh, several hundred for sure. The team has written thousands.
So, Chris, how many more of these studies has Dr. Rob written than you have?
What do you say, 1,000?
I've written hundreds.
999.
There you go. Yeah, that's right.
Actually, I'll put this as a plug, but we started using smallgrip.com as a beta when it first came out. I got the email from Michael Kelly. I didn't know who Michael Kelly was, but I saw the description of it. And I said, please let me try this out. So Dr. Rob inadvertently wrote most of our small, from that point on, most of our sermon-based studies, because that's how I wrote them, was with smallgrip.com.
So there's a lot of experience there, which means you've learned a lot of lessons. And so you're bringing all that into this environment today. So tell us, like, the first thing. What's rule number one of the sermon-based Bible
Subscribe
study?
To smallgrip.com, right?
Well, that's definitely the business plug. But if you're writing your own content, I think the first number one rule to remember about writing a sermon-based study is that you need to know the goal. Sure, in general, a sermon-based study's goal is just to align some shape with the message, but there are so many different ways to go about doing that if you don't know what that sub-goal is, then you're going to go off, you know, some other rabbit trail or beaten path. And a lot of our clients over the years have done one of three methods. First, they have they've created a guide that reflects very heavily on that message. Chris, this is something that you described that you've done in the past, where they have a manuscript or an outline, or they've actually listened to the message and they're heavily reflecting. Almost every question is, Chris said this in his message, or Brian said this in his message, and there's a lot of heavy interaction, and it's probably heavily bent toward interaction and application of that text. Some groups, however, are more emphasizing the text, and any kind of reflection or interaction with the message on Sunday is really more organic. It just kind of happens to take place in the conversation of the group. It doesn't have to be text-driven either. It could just be topical. So, for example, my first sermon-based small group experience was 6-7 years ago when I moved to Lifeway. We walked into a small group. I did not attend church that Sunday, but I walked into a sermon-based small group that week. And the first question was this. It was, when have you ever been the most alone in your life? Well, I could grab onto that question very easily, even though I had not attended. And the conversation dove into a text that was about loneliness and anxiety and the things that come. There was some organic reference to the message, and it was a sermon-based study, but there was no analysis, no quotations, nothing like that. And, in some groups, they really want to study the text and the topic that the pastor's going to do before it's preached. It's not quite as common, but it does happen. So this positions the small group experience to be a little bit different. It's not so much reflecting on, of course it can't, it's more preparing you for, and that dynamic's a little bit true. So if you know the goal from the very beginning, you're going to craft your study to hit that sub-goal.
Chris, have you seen that? I mean, how often have you seen that studying prior to? That's not something I've seen a lot.
No, I haven't seen that a lot either.
It's interesting because pastors, they have differing opinions about it, obviously, but it takes the pressure off of the pastor to create that manuscript or that outline so that the group question guide can be written.
Yeah.
Well,
I think that's the hard part, is getting a pastor that's going to be that far ahead. I mean, there's some pastors, like Andy Stanley's a famous kind of example of it, where he'll be like 6 weeks ahead on his messages. Mm. But most pastors, my pastor included, would basically have his notes, and you guys know this well because you custom did the studies for us, and we would try to get them to you, his notes, by Thursday of that week. Mm. A lot of times it was Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's the rhythm of most, seems like most pastors.
Yeah. And by diffusing the pressure away from the pastor, you're actually putting it on that group leader to have a guide that's probably a little bit more robust. It's got some more questions, some more digging into the text, and it puts the onus on that leader to be able to facilitate that conversation more than if it was a reaction or reflection of the sermons that's given on the weekend.
Is there a sweet spot for how much information is in that guide? Because I know you can go super in depth. I think the template for smallgrip.com is like 4 pages mm-hmm. with some commentary, but we had you guys do more of a one pager for us.
Yes.
For hosts. Is there like a sweet spot for that?
I'm finding that it's anywhere from 6 to 12 questions, and whether that has a lot of commentary or explanatory content there to help somebody facilitate that conversation better is kind of up to the church. But 6 to 12 questions is kind of the sweet spot. Smallgrip.com does reflect that. Even though those studies are 3 pages long or so, they're anywhere from 6 to 12 questions present. depending on the topic or the text that's being laid out.
What kinds of things go into knowing these goals, Rob? If you've got senior pastor experience, and so you're leading your church in this way, or you've asked the education guy or small groups pastor to do this, how are you going to direct this process?
I'm going to ask my discipleship pastor to understand the personality and the culture of the church. Churches, just like people, have personalities. So if I've got a heavily relational kind of church environment, then I'm going to make sure that, yes, it's a sermon-based study, but at the same time, the goal of the group is not just to reflect on the text, it's also to form relationships. If it's a super entrepreneurial kind of church and the group opportunity is yes, it's a sermon-based study, but it has a goal of launching new ideas and ministries and opportunities. So I'm going to ask that discipleship pastor to be really sensitive to the culture overall, the personality of the church first and foremost. But then also I want that discipleship pastor to be very, very sensitive to some of the challenges and opportunities that these studies kind of have at large, which we can talk about at some point. But that's, you know.
So know the goal. And know the culture. And I know in your work, one of the things that just, and Chris is probably the same way, that's just amazing about just our interactions with you as a part of this team here at Lifeway is your knowledge of so many churches. What are some examples of church culture?
Sure. I mentioned a couple. So a relational culture is a huge one. Small groups, I think, in general, tend to cultivate good relationships, maybe more than classroom settings. So that's a very, very popular culture that we tend to cater to. We also do get into churches that are very, missional would be a good word. They want to take the study and apply it and do what the word says. And so the group time has not really been, it's not been an excellent group time if the group has not walked out of there and said, okay, individually, these are some of the things that I'm going to do as a result of our time together, but also as a group and as a institution, as a church, we are going to go and do this thing as a result of what we learned. So we tend to cater not just to relational churches, but also to very missional-minded churches that want to apply what they've learned.
You run into very often churches because one of the things that your team does is you look at the website, you have conversations, there's probably some interviews at various levels. Do you get into situations very often to where churches don't know their culture as well as they think they do?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. It's a lot like church values, right? There are some that are present and real, and there are some that are aspirational, and they want to use those guides to help both reflect what's real and then push and guide the church into a different kind of value set.
I think it's important if you're the small group point person, especially if you're writing sermon-based studies, that the culture starts with your senior leader, with whoever is giving that message. So spending time with them, knowing what their heart is, what are they looking for, look at the goal in mind. So with your small groups, what is the goal? What's the end goal? How do you create disciples? And then kind of know where your pastor's heart is. So if you're creating something that's, for instance, my pastor was more about community relationships. If we created sermon-based studies that were more, in a different direction, more hardcore, kind of read your Bible, that's not where his heart was. So I had to know that his culture was more of the relationship side and kind of fill in the gaps from there. But that's step one, is spend time with your senior leader. Know who they are. They create, whether they know it or not, they create the culture for your church.
And it seems like, Chris, knowing the culture is one thing, but that doesn't automatically mean to Rob's point, if you have a pastor that is very much in the text, a line-by-line type of preacher, is that also not a case if you're developing a sermon-based study to maybe go more towards an application? Would you write more towards an application model that way, since the congregation isn't necessarily getting that during the sermon?
I think that's a good question for Dr. Rob, because I'm sure you serve churches that are that way, right?
Well, they certainly do try, but Chris's point is probably a stronger point in that a pastor cannot be, for example, cerebral and doctrinal and exegetical, and then expect the group time to be the place where it's highly relational and application-oriented, because the group time is going to reflect in many ways how the sermon is heard. And so if a pastor is eager to see application and relationships form in that small group experience, his message is actually going to have to change to emphasize some of that.
Yeah, because if you're going that direction, you're writing another message. So they've already heard one message. If you want them to take it a different direction, you know, more relational, whatever, you're going to have to write another message for them to hear or read through during the group time. So I think that's a very good point. So you said know the goal, know the culture. What else do they need to know?
Well, I think it's just important to understand that there are just some, regardless of what your culture is and regardless of what your goal might be, you really do have some core elements to a sermon-based study that that are necessary regardless of what those goals and cultures are. One of those that comes immediately to mind is that whether you heard the message or not, you need an opportunity to interact with the topic or text that's being addressed in that group. As I gave an example earlier, the first time I showed up to a sermon-based group, I wasn't there, but I was able to connect instantly to what was being discussed, and that needs to be that's a core part of a sermon-based message or sermon-based study, if you will. There are so many challenges and great opportunities here, but I'm kind of overlapping in my thoughts here a little bit, but a really good group experience and a really good sermon-based study guide here is going to open the Bible. One of the dangers and challenges associated with a sermon-based group is that it can become an analysis of the pastor or even the message and less of an interaction, and that message can kind of take on an authority of its own. And it's really important that we open the Bible because the Bible is the authority. And so a really good sermon-based guide will always have a biblical component. Open the text. That's where the authority lies in the scriptures. And then application is huge. Don't just be a hearer of the word, James says. Let's do what it says. And so many group experiences are hypothetical instead of applicational.
A couple things. I love what you said. When I read one of the studies that you guys have written, whether smallgroup.com or custom, you include multiple scriptures. So you're giving perspective on the topic, not just the one that the pastor hits. And that's one of the difficulties of writing your own, isn't it, don't you think?
Absolutely. And in addition to that, I would add that one of the challenges of writing your own is finding those multiple ways to get to application inside the group. So application tends to be very individualistic in our culture, but we want to move beyond that. There needs to be group application. There needs to be institutional application. There needs to be missional application. Everything that we're learning from the Bible has a means of being just bigger than us. We want to apply it across, outside of ourselves, into all those different ways. And so we try to write guides that reflect that goal and give the churches the opportunity to do that.
And on the application section, do you give them two or three questions usually, or is that a one question, do this week?
Yes. Small group is always going to be three questions, and usually a personal application, a relational application, and a missional application.
You're giving them all three. That study.
That's right. Now, some of our custom clients, they're very specific about what they want, and we have those notes, and we write according to their specific guidelines, and it's not always that. But at small group, that is the goal.
Not everyone listening may understand the difference between smallgroup.com and the custom aspect of the...
Yes. Thank you for pointing that out, Brian. I appreciate it. So custombiblestudy.com, this is where we assign a discipleship strategist to be your extension of your staff. We're a staff member on your church, and we understand who you are, what your values are, what you're trying to accomplish in your writing, whether that is sermon-based or not. And that person then oversees the creation of all that content, from design to language, everything. And we're the ghostwriters serving you behind the scenes, and we deliver everything to you digitally. Smallgroup.com is this vast library where we give you 2,200 Bible studies and more every day. And you can do all of you can use that content to write your own, and kind of, you know, so you don't have to start from a blank page.
And I'll say the custom work that they do is amazing. That's actually where we started. Our relationship with Lifeway was through the custom team. And, you know, like I said, most of the time we would send our notes on Thursday, and you guys would have a study for us within 24 hours. So you would have a fully developed multiple scripture study for us the next day. Sometimes we would get it on notes on Friday, send it to you, you'd have it to us on Saturday. Sometimes we would say, this is crammed, we got it on Saturday. You guys would have it that night. Now, that's probably not always the case. If that's always the case, you'll probably get fired as a customer. But, I mean, that's how good these guys are. I mean, you guys are just amazing at just turning it around and doing it so quickly.
Well, our custom clients, we've never disappointed a custom client in turnaround. 7 years I've been here, we've just never done it. I've known a staff member to spend the night here a couple of times to make that happen, so we've never done that. Small group allows us to have some flexibility with our customers in that regard. But we're happy to serve everybody at every level they need us.
Yeah, I think at the time, I didn't know it, but Brandon Hiltabottle was writing our studies. And we probably put him through some late nights.
You may have.
Early mornings, sleeping on the floor of his office. Sorry, Brandon.
So, Rob and Chris, this might be for you too. There are churches out there that right now are thinking about, man, I'd like to do that. That sounds, and there are some obvious upsides, I think, to sermon-based Bible study. What are two or three things that you would say just off the top of your head, either one of you, as a way of counsel in terms of pros and cons of this? What are some things that maybe you haven't thought of, you need to be aware of? And what are some things that you haven't thought of that maybe are shortcomings to this approach?
Yeah, sure. Man, I would say that sermon-based studies are an ideal way to generate and cultivate unity in the church. Chris, you've already spoken at large about the influence that the pastor has in his teaching and his teaching style and what that's going to do throughout the personality and culture of the church. And so the sermon-based studies are just one more layer of doing that. And so if there is a desire to generate unity and continuity, whether it's for a short time around a certain topic or thing that you're trying to accomplish as a church, or if it's a part of the culture that you want to have, sermon-based studies are an excellent opportunity in that respect. They are a great opportunity for emphasizing application. I'm in both a Sunday school and a small group environment in my church, and on Sunday morning, that classroom setting, it is all about the Word, but where there's little or no attention ever given, right, to the application, because the room is big, it's full of people, I don't have anybody to talk to in those respects, but man, in that small group experience, there's a really good opportunity that because it's sermon-based, I don't have to talk about what. It's already been discussed. It's already been shared. I can talk about how, what am I going to do with this? And so it's a really good opportunity for that. And I just think from an administrative perspective, if I'm a groups pastor, it lowers the barrier of entry for a small group leader for it mm-hmm. to be a sermon-based study more than, even more so than other forms of study. So I would say keep that in mind.
Yeah. We're going to get more in depth in a future episode about sermon-based study systems, but I think you're right. It's an easy entry for new leaders and for group members, because a lot of times with studies, there's homework involved. You know, they have to read something, listen to something. All they have to do with a sermon-based study is show up for church, or nowadays listen to the podcast. When we're doing sermon-based studies in our group, somebody misses, we're like, just go online, listen to it or watch it, and you've done your homework. You're walking into it. And it reinforces, most of the time, people forget the message by Tuesday, Monday, you've forgotten. It reinforces that message that the pastor gave, which was important. God gave it to him. It's for the church. If your group's talking about it on Wednesday, they're carrying that message out through the entire week. So there's a lot of pros. There are some cons. I would say one con, I've talked about this before, is you can end up talking about the same things over and over. If you're a sermon-based study group for years, and that really kind of goes back to the crafting of the study. If you're crafting them the same way, mm-hmm. you're going to have the same conversations. If you're giving more perspective, like what Rob does with his team, then you're going to be able to steer clear of that. So I think there's opportunity there.
Some of our clients have complained about sermon fatigue at times because of the way the study was crafted. You can just hammer the same point over and over and over again. So that's one of the dangers that you have to be very careful of in writing your study, that you're not creating sermon fatigue and creating boredom in the group because they just heard this on Sunday. Why is this being discussed again?
Sermon fatigue. I like that. A caution I would give to is don't do it by yourself. Don't do it on your own. at least have a team of people that help you write these. So recruit two or three people. I did that at my church before we started using Rob's team. I had a couple people that wrote for a living, so they would help me write them. But get some more perspective on it, some more eyeballs on it. That will help you write a better study.
And this is true even at small group, Chris, so and at Custom Bible Study. Even though we assign an author who understands who you are and your voice and whatnot, all those studies are seen by four people, every single study. And there's a lot of collaboration that goes into the creation of each one. It's super important.
That's good.
So, Rob, have you heard of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network?
I have, Brian.
Brian is so subtle in setting these up. We are a part of the Lifeway Leadership Network podcast. We want to talk about another podcast that's on our network. Have you listened to the New Churches Q&A podcast yet? It's the one hosted by Daniel M., Todd Atkins, and Ed Stetzer. Well, they're a part of the network family, and they've recently talked about how to handle MLMs in your church. I have no idea what that means, but if you listen to it, I'm guessing you do. If a non-type A personality can succeed in church planning in multi-site versus church plants. Just look up New Church's Q&A on your favorite podcasting app and subscribe today.
Wow, Daniel M., Todd Atkins, and Ed Stetzer. That one,
it's a lot of brain power.
That's Can't Miss TV.
It's good.
That's what they used to call it anyway. Well, if you haven't liked us on iTunes, we hope that you will. And if you can find it in your hearts, we'd love a review. Those things do matter. You can you can find us at the Group Answers on any iTunes, right? Or yeah. Your iTunes account.
We fired a co-host because of a bad review.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Remember Dan? Dan that used to host with us? Yeah, he's done.
He's gone. He's gone because he got a bad review.
Yep, that's it.
So
if you don't like either Brian and I...
If you have a heart. Actually, no. That's not what we want.
And it's not true.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Group Answers podcast. I'd like to thank Dr. Rob Timms for being a part of us. Thanks, Rob. And let's not make it so long before you're back with us. I'm Brian Daniel for Chris Surratt. We'll see you next time.